Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving. At your desk. Maybe at the gym. But you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach. And see a rocket launch. Or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cricket Unfiltered. I'm Menez. I'm joined by Paul Dennett. We're recording this live straight after the Sixers have knocked out the Adelaide Strikers. The Sixers march on to the final against the Scorchers in the Big Bash. Paul, what a match we have seen unfold.
Yeah, thoroughly entertaining game. And what about Hayden Kerr? Promoted to opener and played a sublime innings that really, you know, the fact that he's taken loads of wickets in this competition as well, it's a real an emergence of a potential future star.
Absolutely. 98 not out. He shepherded the Sixers over the line while his teammates have been dropping like flies before the game and then during the game. Jordan Silk injured himself. Stephen O'Keefe injured himself. So the Sixers are the walking wounded. And I was listening to the Grandstand Cricket podcast with Ed Cowan this week, and he said that Hayden Kerr opens the batting for Sydney Uni and the Sixers probably need to push him up the order. And well, they did it, and he played one of the most stunning knocks in BBL history. Paul, I'm calling that the greatest win in Big Bash history. I mean, the Sixers had no right to win that game. The Strikers win six in a row, and wow, what a performance.
Yeah, it's very, very big. I'm not sure it's the greatest win in Big Bash history, but it's certainly up there. And the other thing, Hayden Kerr is the only one of the 11 not to pull a hamstring during the game, which is quite impressive as well.
Apparently, it's just Hayden Kerr playing in the final.
Yeah. Hayden Kerr and Steve Waugh are going to open the batting.
Yeah, Hayden Kerr and Jake Carter are filling all 11 positions. So look, Paul and I probably chat about a few bits of news, but so the Sixers now play the Scorchers in the final. The Strikers batted first today. They made 167. They were sent in by the Sixers. They lost a few early wickets. Carey was out for one, Short out for six, Travis Head out for three. Some good bowling by O'Keefe and Abbott, but then Cobain and Wells and then Renshaw combined to get the Strikers to 167. So, you know, that was a pretty good performance with the Sixers. Their bowling is less affected by COVID and injuries.
It's one of my pet hates actually what happened in this game, that after four overs, Sydney Sixers were well on top, and they then brought the spinners on. And Ponting in commentary, who you know I rate very highly, but he said, "Oh, this is what you know. This is what sides tend to do now, that bring the spinners on, put all the field back, and really try to rush through a few overs." But putting the field back at that point was a mistake. There's no two ways about it. That if they'd kept the field up, then the pressure that the Strikers would have been under, it may well have led to a couple of more wickets. Instead, they were able to consolidate, take some plenty of easy singles and work their way back into the game. I've seen it time and time again over the years in 50-over cricket and 20-over cricket. You need to keep the field up. And if they hit a, you know, if they hit a couple of audacious fours, you can always put it back. It's not the end of the world. But I think it was poor tactics on behalf of the Sixers, and it let the Strikers back into the game.
Yeah, you sent me a message during the game and I've been sort of thinking about it. And look, I think you're on to something. It's interesting that every team seems to drop the field back as soon as they can. But you're right. I mean, there is something to let's see if these guys can hit through or over the field. And you're right, if they're good enough to do it a couple of times, then you can drop the field back. So I actually do see where you're coming from.
Especially given it was O'Keefe that was bowling the over. And, you know, one of the finest T20 bowlers going round. His performance this year has been exceptional. His economy rate is right up there with amongst the best in the tournament. So, I understand the human nature feel of it. You think, all right, put everyone back. And if they want to get a few singles, we'll probably get one or two dot balls. We'll get out of this with four or five off the over. That's a win. And it normally is. But when you've got a side three for not very many, you're on the verge of blowing them out of the game. And so Enriquez, like almost every captain before him, didn't take that opportunity. But I bet you Ian Chappell would have, or Shane Warne, some of those more aggressive captains probably would have.
Mm. So, yeah, it was a good bowling performances by the Sixers, but a good finish by the Strikers. And then chasing 168, I mean, Avendano opened the batting with Hayden Kerr. Jake Carter was at 3, Enriquez 4, Christian 5. None of them really did much until Sean Abbott came out to join Hayden Kerr, and then it became a more than just a one-man show. Sean Abbott smashed 41 off 20. I mean, that was scintillating batting, and it's just what the team needed, not just for the run rate, but I felt Kerr, you know, needed someone to just take the pressure off him from a few overs.
Oh, Abbott played superbly, and it was funny, Kerr played one of the best innings in the history of the Big Bash. His first two balls were pretty ordinary. He jumped down the track to the first one off John O'Wells, missed it and should have been stumped, but wasn't. And then next ball got a leading edge that somehow kind of found its way to safety and they got two. So it was a pretty nervous start. But from then, he started to strike the ball with great authority. And you could tell in commentary how impressed Ricky Ponting was with the crispness of the way that he was striking the ball. It was really enjoyable to watch. I know we normally do the questions at the end, but just because Mike Viney's put up one that makes sense at the moment. Paul, does the four-over power play exacerbate the safety-first bowling strategy? Well, I think it kind of does because they've got the choice to actually put the fielders back. If it had been a six-over power play, then they would have had to keep the fielders up in the circle in those two. And so it's also noteworthy that when they eventually did have to bring the field in later on in the innings, that's when the next wicket fell. That's what often happens when the surge occurs, that sides do sort of squeeze. And, you know, an aside that I've said this before, I'm happy with the surge now. I've kind of got used to it, but I wish they'd go back to the full six over power play and a surge and give us eight overs of power play. I think that'd be more entertaining.
Yeah, agree. We'd see higher totals, that's for sure. And people love runs. Yeah, I forgot about that Carey mischance, actually, off the first ball of the innings. Hayden Kerr missing that ball off Wells. So a bit of a stinker for Carey. Doesn't do much with the bat. And then, you know, he takes that stumping. I mean, Kerr, 98, not out of 58. Certainly the decisive knock. So, yeah, Carey probably having a few issues with the gloves. We saw it in the test team and so sort of carried on to the Big Bash. It got tight towards the end. Sixers needed 13 off the last over, and they got there off the last ball, hitting a 2 that was misfield and went to 4. So just such a brave performance, Paul. I mean, you know, this Sixers club, they could have just thrown the towel in and you know, sulked, but they're somehow in the final and, you know, a chance at three titles.
I'd love to see a graph of win viz in that final over. It would have been going berserk because I think as the over began, it was pretty evenly poised, I reckon, probably about 50-50. And then there was the wicket and then Dwarshus came out. And that was one of the things that Sydney probably got wrong, that Dwarshus, who played so magnificently the other night, coming out in the final over, would have been nice to see him promoted up the order, I think, instead of some of those others. Although probably I might have said that about Kerr as well. So they certainly got it right with Kerr. He got run out without facing a ball. And what was it then? They needed, was it 11 off four or something like that? And it felt that the sixes were gone, really. And Kerr got them over the line.
And that massive six over mid-wicket.
Well, it was the one that was almost caught on the boundary by John O'Wells, wasn't it? That he leapt through the air and almost managed to flick it back in. So, yeah, it was a thoroughly entertaining game. You know, we'll talk about the Big Bash and how it's gone as a tournament. But I know that my friends weren't watching. They were all watching the tennis. But I was thoroughly enjoying it. And it'd be interesting to see what the ultimate TV ratings were because it deserved a good crowd.
So I think we've probably got the two best. There's only 11,000, not even 11,000 people in the ground tonight for that game, which is a disappointing crowd. Obviously, you take COVID factors into it. I think if Steve Smith had been playing, you could probably add 4,000 or 5,000 onto that. So they probably missed out there. But I mean, 10,000. I mean, that's not a great crowd.
I give them I don't care. I think that. I excuse them. What I'm trying to say is let's wait till next year when hopefully the world is normal, although wouldn't put my house on it. But I just think that there are so many people who are just thinking, I don't want to be on public transport at the moment. I don't want to be in a ground where I've got to go to the toilet and there's going to be crowds inside. And especially given the feeling that maybe in a couple of weeks or in a couple of months, things will subside. But with hospitals overflowing, I just think there are plenty of people who are just totally not considering going. And I think that if the world was normal, that they would have got 30,000 there tonight.
Yeah, it's a good point. But, yeah, so the Scorchers start massive favourites for the final. I mean, the Sixers, definitely the second-best side in the competition behind the Scorchers, but the Scorchers, with their only main injury concern being Mitch Marsh at this stage. I mean, you never know. Like, we could wake up tomorrow and half the Scorchers side is ruled out because they've all got COVID. But obviously, let's hope that doesn't happen. But
yeah.
But just as it stands at the moment while we record this, you'd have to say, as the current lineups stand, that the Scorchers go in as massive favourites.
I agree they go in as favourites, but I don't think anyone goes in as massive favourites in the Big Bash. I think the competition is still fairly tight, and I think that the Sixers are a pretty good side. So I think that the Scorchers go in as favourites, but I think it's more of a 60-40 sort of favouritism rather than an 80-20 favouritism.
Yeah, it's just, of the 11 players that played in the last game, against the Sixers for the Scorchers. So of the Scorchers 11, 9 of them are international players with international experience. So you've got, Inglis, Patterson, Mitch Marsh, Munro, Turner, Agar, Richardson, Ty, Behrendorf, the 9 players going against the Sixers, which essentially might be, 6 or 7 players that are, making the transition from grade cricket now into the big time. So, you're right. But I think there's a fairly big gap on paper between these two sides.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And it's going to be interesting to see who from the Sixers is fit. Like, I mean, O'Keefe, you'd think hopefully will be fit. He went off with a bit of a calf complaint, but that might have been just a precautionary measure. I think he's quite key. But I think any side with O'Keefe and Lyon in it, is going to be pretty effective. And whoever wins, they will take the lead, is because they've each got 3 titles, and it'll be the winner will go to 4 as the most in BBL history. So at this stage, it's a very fitting final, as it was last year, between the two most successful franchises in the tournament's history.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if I want to talk about the whole Steve Smith situation, Paul, because, it's driven me mad. I've even been looking through the law books about how we could bring back the death penalty to, apply that to people that have let this happen. So I think I've kind of lost my mind about the whole thing and lost perspective. But I find the whole situation wholly unsatisfactory that Steve Smith was not playing. You can go through all the details about it, but in the end, would the IPL let Virat Kohli sit at home while it's going on? No, this is a huge mistake. This is a a massive fluff by the administrators. And, you know, I think heads have to roll, and this can't ever be allowed to happen again.
I agree. I just think it's madness that the thing that annoys me a little bit is that people outside of Sydney are making the point, oh, it's always the people, it's the people from Sydney who are complaining. And I would guarantee you that if this was, you know, if Steve Smith was traditionally a Perth Scorchers player and this was happening, I would be just as vociferous in saying he should be allowed to play. I like the Sydney Sixers to win, but it doesn't bother me that much either way. What I like far more is for the Big Bash to succeed. I want it to be a really successful tournament, as it was 4 or 5 years ago, and as I think it will be again, to bring in new fans, to be a wonderful adjunct to the summer. And to have Steve Smith available and not playing, regardless of which team he's playing for, is massively disappointing. And I understand the laws and all those sorts of things, but I think that when you pull back and look at it from the big picture, as you said, it wouldn't happen in the IPL. It shouldn't have happened here. They should have just said, we're not going to send it to the five other states to make decisions. We are going to just unilaterally say it's in the best interest of the Big Bash that he plays. Away you go.
Yeah. As I said, I'm ropeable about it. I mean, it went to a vote of the six state CEOs. One voted in favour of it, probably the New South Wales CEO, Lee Jamon, and then five voted against it. So, I mean, they obviously don't have the best interests of the game at heart, more their own self-interest. So, look, I think we should move on because I think we could talk about it for hours because it's so frustrating. But in the end, what annoys me is, you know, there would have been three big games that could have been headlined by Steve Smith. And, you know, I'm going to just have to cool my jets a bit on the Big Bash for a while because I feel like it's just ripped my heart out that the administrators can let this happen. You know, if you're following closely over the last 3 years, this tournament, every year is desperate for star power, and then they just fluff this. I mean, Alistair Dobson, the head of Big Bash, he should have just not allowed this to happen. Nick Hockley, again, should have not allowed this to happen. Just a disaster.
Absolutely. And imagine if you could go back to the TV negotiations back 3 years ago when they, you know, they with much fanfare signed that deal for, what was it, $1.1 billion over 6 years. And if you'd sort of said, oh, by the way, guys, what would happen in a situation like this? We would, as the TV networks who are shelling out this enormous amount of money, we'd like to make sure that you're going to get the best players playing. They would have fallen over backwards to say yes, 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 yes. Instead, next time the TV rights are up for negotiation, this is the sort of thing that networks would think about and think, well, maybe we won't pay so much. And then the states who all said no, it'll filter down to them. They'll get less for it. It's, you know, it's harming cricket in the long term. And I just think that's really disappointing.
Yeah. And look, the players are not happy about it. They've all been very vocal. So, you know, they've given the players something to put in their back pocket of where the administrators really messed one up. And look, let's move on. Is there anything you want to add to the Big Bash? I wouldn't mind quickly touching on the Australian squad that was announced for the Sri Lankan T20 series.
No, happily going on to that. What did you think about the fact that Mitch Marsh is being rested? Is that a little bit strange?
So I think the reasoning is Mitch Marsh and David Warner are just being given some time off ahead of the Pakistan tour. So that's obviously a bubble fatigue issue. I'm surprised Mitch Marsh is a lock for the Pakistan tour, but I guess, you know, he was part of the Ashes tour and he backed up Cameron Green. So, I mean, Aaron Finch has retained his spot as captain, surprisingly. All the usual faces are there. Travis Head comes in. Moses Enriquez comes in. Ben McDermott comes in after being named Big Bash Player of the Tournament. All the other players remain from the T20 World Cup. So no real surprises. Jai Richardson comes in. He wasn't part of the T20 World Cup squad. And actually, conversely, Jai Richardson's not going to Pakistan. He's taken himself out of the running. He and the selectors and the people that manage him said he's not going to Pakistan. He's going to stay here where they can manage him better. So, look, I think that's a good squad against Sri Lanka.
Now, I did note you said were you being sarcastic or just passive aggressive when you mentioned that Aaron Finch has been retained and you added the word surprisingly?
Well, I'm just, you know, he's been carrying injuries throughout the Big Bash. He hasn't looked particularly fit or in form. And I'm not surprised they picked him, but it's just, I'm just not sure how long it can go on for until he, you know, shows some of the glimpses of the Aaron Finch we used to see a few years ago.
I mean, I think you're being harsh. I think that he averaged, I'm looking at it now, he averaged 39 at a strike rate of 130 and was comfortably, not that he had to beat much, the Renegades' best scorer. He scored 386 runs. Their next highest was 231. Not too bad. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I know. He just didn't look to me like a... It doesn't look to me like an international player anymore. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I mean, on that basis, then, you know, I don't know what the players around him have done, but you're basically saying none of them would look like international players. That seems just seems far too harsh to me.
Anyway, but good to have Travis Head get a go again, Moses Enriquez. I can't imagine Sri Lanka causing us too many headaches at home.
No, I don't think so. Although they did have some signs of that they were doing better than expected at the T20 World Cup. They went in there with very, very low expectations. I mean, they weren't even in the main group, but they showed a bit. So hopefully they can show a bit. But yeah, I mean, on Australian in Australian conditions, they're going to find it difficult. But yeah, you never know. You never know.
Anyone from the Australian squad you're particularly keen to see do well?
I'd like to see Aaron Finch do well.
Same. I mean, I like the guy. I mean, I hope he comes out and scores 300s. And just trying to scampers pull up between the wickets.
He's quick between the wickets. Yeah, I mean, looking at the numbers here, he's got about the 12th or so highest average in the whole Big Bash. So you basically, I mean, Moses Enriquez averaged 39 with a strike rate of 134. Very, very similar numbers to him. Are you saying that that he doesn't look an international player?
Well, I mean, I think probably Enriquez is... Yeah, I mean, no. On those figures, I still think Enriquez is an international player, and Finch, I think, is not the same as he was a few years ago.
Yeah, I don't think he's quite as good as he was a few years ago, but I think that those figures aren't too bad. Anyway, so I think that at this stage, he would need to have a shocking run of form to not be the captain in the World Cup. So I think he'll be the captain, I'd say.
We're stuck with him. No, I mean, you know, he's a good leader, but I'm just not sure he's in our best six T20 players anymore, batters. So I watched the movie documentary Shane last night, Paul.
Yeah, I saw your tweets.
So it was given a big screen debut. It's a documentary about Shane Warne, and now it's on Amazon Prime. And so it was about 90 minutes. And one thing that it brought back to me was the sheer joy of living through Warne's career. I mean, I was lucky enough to be at the SCG for his test debut. He took his 300th wicket at the SCG. You know, just watching his career on television and then up close was just a joy. And the documentary certainly brought that back.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, and I could imagine how it would do that. And I think that what you're next going to say is something that I'm going to emphatically agree with, and that is that it needs to also have the tough questions asked. And I think that sometimes Warne is surprisingly candid about quite a lot of things, and that then can possibly give the veneer of that it's all totally candid and everything's on the table. But there are certain topics that if you were going to be interviewing Shane Warne, that you'd be very nervous in raising. And for example, the situation surrounding his positive drugs test in the 2003 World Cup and the comments that were made, you know, the judgments that were made around that, it would take a bold interviewer or a bold documentary maker to really raise them and ask the questions that are sort of uncomfortable. And I think he'd probably walk out.
Yeah, so it was sort of, you know, Warne was in on this. So, look, they had access to his ex-wife, his children, you know, lots of you know, cricketers. Bizarrely, there was Ed Sheeran and Chris Martin talking about his career. I mean, I didn't know who Ed Sheeran was for the first time he came up. Like, who's this guy with orange hair talking about cricket? So it was bizarre. And they do sort of touch on a few of the issues, but it's very sanitized. I wouldn't say there's any real probing. So you're not going to get – it's certainly not a multidimensional look at his career. It's a very sort of shallow look at it. And you know, a couple of things annoyed me. So they're talking about when Warne, you know, was caught cheating on his ex-wife in 2005 and his daughter is, you know, really emotional, crying, saying, you know, what it was like to see her dad like that. And then they cut in something which clearly recorded about something else completely out of context of all the kids saying, oh, he was always there for us, which is nothing to do with that situation at all. So that kind of irked me because you could tell then, okay, what else are they sort of shuffling around? But I think if you just want to sort of relive bits of his career and not look too deeply, it's not too bad. So I gave it a 6.5 out of 10 because it was very enjoyable. But as I said, you know, it's not multidimensional.
And I don't mind it if that's all it purports to do. But sometimes if they just sort of said, look, here's the career of a player. It wasn't perfect, but we're basically going to just bring back the joy of that player's career. Then, and we're not heavy hitting or anything else like that, that's fine. But if it's kind of marketing itself as like, this is the no hold barred definitive, then they've got to go through the unpleasant stuff. Not so much about marital affairs. I couldn't care less about that. I'm talking more about the stuff that directly related to cricket.
Mm. Yeah, and they get into the bookmaking stuff. So, look, if viewers, listeners, Paul, go and watch it. I'd be interested in your feedback. One thing that I guess, you know, I think some people, you know, younger than us maybe who didn't live through his career and just have seen the highlights and, you know, hear him on the TV now and saying crazy things is, you know, it should never be forgotten, A, how great he was on the field, and the fact that, you know, when he used to come on to bowl, effectively, the nation used to stop. I mean, you know, Warne bowling was an event, and you don't have that now. I mean, it was truly spectacular. And, that should never be forgotten.
I agree. And I also think that the level of supposed craziness that people ascribe to him now is vastly overdone. That I still think that, you know, 4 out of 5 topics, he makes good sense and he's a very good commentator. It's just that the 1 out of 5 that he kind of goes a bit left field, it's in a strange way. Like he's vendetta against Steve Waugh and John Buchanan and a few of these things like that. You just think you should just let those go and you'd be far better for it. And occasionally when he goes a little bit silly, but on the whole, at his best, I think he's one of the best commentators.
Mm. All right, so I've got my good day, bad day from Cricket Daily for you, Paul. So,
yep.
Bad day, the David Lloyd bumble impression by Harry Conway. I've had enough of that. The networks have got to stop trotting it out. Conway's been doing this Lloyd impression for years now. Conway needs to get some new material. So, Harry Conway, you need to get to the comedy writing room. You've been knocked out of the Big Bash now, so you've got plenty of time. You need to find some new material because I can't hear that again. So, that's my bad day.
You're hearing it again for the nth time. The vast majority of people would have been hearing it for the first time. Your knowledge of, I would put it to you that your knowledge of Harry Conway is a bit more detailed than the average cricket fan.
He's done it on this podcast. 2 years ago, he did it.
Well, yes. I mean, and this podcast's listenership is vast, but there are presumably some people who haven't heard that podcast.
Yeah. Well, that's annoying. Good day. So moving on to women's cricket, Grace Harris, who has been included in the Australian Women's World Cup squad for the 50-over World Cup that's taking place in New Zealand next month. Grace Harris, who I just think brings a new dimension to the team because she's such a powerful, aggressive stroke player. I think she molds really nicely with some of the more classical players in that top order. So, yeah, good day, Grace Harris. She's been on this podcast. She's an absolute corker of a person. So great to see her being rewarded for fine performances over a number of years.
Good call, good call. Now, I didn't realise we were still doing good day, bad day because that might then entail me doing a start of the day, but I don't have one. So I might get the start of the day... I'll let it go through to the keeper from now on.
I just sort of had that. I just wanted to criticize the Bumble thing. So I thought, okay, I found something bad. I got to find something good. I told you, bad, good day, bad day is only an excuse to do bad day.
I get that. Yep.
And I so, support that. Good. So the Women's Ashes continues. So if you're listening to this, probably the test is underway. Most people are listening on the podcast feed, but Australia leading the Women's Ashes series 4-2, only one T20 game getting a result. The big news there, Elise Perry not picked for the T20 side, which was, quite a shock.
Well, they sort of flagged it in the days leading up to it, and I think it's the right call. She'll obviously still figure in the longer forms of the game. But as far as the T20 side is, if I'm picking my best Australian 11 at the moment, she doesn't figure in it. And it will be interesting to see if this does cause a change in approach. And if she just says, okay, well, bugger you guys, you want me to be more aggressive, I'll do it. And it might actually, she might play all the better for it.
Yeah, we hope so. She certainly struggled in the WBBL with the bat at times. So yeah, look, the test match is probably underway, but, love the test match. 4 points on offer in the test match. So one of the criticisms is that because 4 points are on offer, that most teams play for a draw because they don't want to, you know, concede the 4 points. So and maybe they need to look at tweaking that down the track.
Well, yeah, and that, and also if history is to go by, I am very fearful that the Manuka Oval pitch will be not conducive to attractive cricket, that they seem to trot out flat, low pitches every time there's a women's test match. So if they can have a nice, bouncy, decent pitch, then it'll be a fantastic spectacle. If they don't, it'll be once again a real disappointment and a blow for women's test cricket.
So, yeah, lots of great action to look forward to. The Big Bash final, the conclusion to the Women's Ashes, so this test match and then three ODIs. So a lot happening on that front. I guess the fact that the Western Australia are now keeping their border closed, there is some uncertainty about what's going to happen to the Australian domestic schedule, whether the Sheffield Shield will continue, whether WA will actually pull out of the tournament. So, yeah, I'll be interested just to see what happens over the next week or two around that.
Yeah. I suppose they could just be travelling as they have done for the Big Bash, but there probably comes a time when you might just think, do you want to live homeless life for far too long?
Yeah, exactly. All right, just before we go, some comments from the viewers. Jeremy Henderson, interesting to note that the final will be the Scorchers' sixth game at Docklands, but that the Sixers' only game there was their loss to the Scorchers last week. So certainly some advantage to the Scorchers, but that's sort of, I guess, effectively what home ground advantage is.
Yeah, I'm sure they'd still rather opt a stadium, but, at least it's some sort of home advantage.
SS98 put this question in four times. So,
hey, guys, will Ben McDermott get a buyer at the IPL auction? Can he play spin?
Well, it's an interesting one. There is talk that batters like Ben McDermott aren't traditionally the overseas players that teams are looking for. There's a lot of talented batters sort of flying around in Indian cricket, but that the franchises look at, you know, really quick bowlers, maybe spinners, the real big stars, but not often batters. But look, maybe they'll look to pick him up. I think he can play spin. I don't know if he'll be able to handle the big dance of the IPL, but you know, maybe the series against Sri Lanka will give us an indication.
I think that's the right answer. Yeah, that they'll be very eager to see what he does at the international level. I think that he's a chance of being picked up. I don't think he'd go for enormous money, but, you know, all you need is a bidding war and anything can happen, I suppose.
Yeah, and I guess it's just hard to judge. I think there'll be a big step up, say, from the quality of attacks he's been facing in this Big Bash to what he'd face in the IPL. I think there'd be like a huge sort of difference there.
Yep.
All righty. Well, Ray, absolutely love the game. Can't wait to see the Aussies get picked in the IPL mega auction. Thanks, everybody, for watching and listening. Paul, anything before we go?
No. Really enjoyed tonight's game, and hopefully the final lives up to its billing as well.
That's right. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving at your desk, maybe at the gym, but you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach and see a rocket launch or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.